This is One Question with Tim and Paul. Hello, Paul.
Hey, Tim. How you doing? That was a nice, pleasant surprise.
I know. I thought you'd appreciate that. For all of you who don't know us from our many, many hours of Red Sox podcasting, I'm Tim DeLoisio. This is Paul Testa. And I just played us in with one of our very favorite songs from our college days at the University of New Hampshire. But this, Paul, this is a new project.
Yeah, we're starting new. Tim, you and I have... We were in podcasting before podcasting was anything. I mean, we had tens of people listening to us.
Tens?
At any given time.
I mean,
and
it
now
was...
every, especially with the quarantine, like everyone is into podcasting so much more. And it's just, you know, it's something that we enjoyed doing. I think both of us got a little tired of doing the Red Sox podcast. Just being
too many championships, Paul. Too many championships. It got old.
But I'm excited for a new project and just getting back into podcasting. I think it'll be great.
Yeah.
And plus, I get to talk to you at least once a week. You
know? That's right. That's right. So the format for this podcast, and who knows, maybe we'll come out with a few other shows to go along with this. We're experimenting. But the format of this podcast will be one single question. So either I will post Paul or Paul will post me one question, and it'll be about a 20-minute to half hour, potentially an hour or 3 hour podcast answer to that one question. No, we'll keep it within a half an hour, my guess. So our first question, Paul, very relevant right now. If you could bring one, but only one sport out of quarantine to finish the current season or play its next season. So if a season is currently in session and it's on a hiatus, you get to finish this season out and start the next season and finish that out. But you can only bring one sport back. What sport are you choosing and why? And before we get to your answer, let's talk about kind of the state of where each of the sports are and give the landscape, because I think it's, you know, it's different by sport right now, how it's been handled. And some commissioners have done a really good job and some have done some poor jobs, Paul.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think overall, I think baseball is probably, you know, at the bottom of the barrel in regards to how they're handling things. They're working out some things. I don't know if it's the players or if it's the owners, who's greedy, who's selfish. It just doesn't seem like they necessarily want to get on the field and stop playing.
Well, it doesn't seem like they're on the same page, but it never really seems like they're on the same page when it comes to the players' union and the owners negotiating, right? I mean, that seems to be the, you know, throughout history, the most contentious of, you know, union-owner relationships, wouldn't you say?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, basketball, I guess, has had some late season starts along the way, but, you know, who can forget 1994? And then every single time a labor agreement's up, there's always this threat. It's a powerful union. The baseball union's a powerful union. It's tough to make changes there. I think everyone who watches baseball, loves baseball, would love to see some enhancements to the game to speed it along, to make it more dramatic, even though baseball in itself is a very dramatic game, but just keep the interest over the course of 162 games. And the union constantly fights those. And then you have the owners on the other side that are like, yeah, you signed these contracts, all this stuff, and we agreed to this thing in March, but guess what? We don't want to honor that anymore. We want to do a new thing. So,
yeah, I don't quite understand the March agreement and where that hampers things. I know that it's been referenced. It gives, you know, there was a tentative agreement that kind of guides where they're, the conversations are going now. But to be honest, it gets so complicated so quickly. The way I look at it right now is it sounds like the owners want a longer season and to prorate pay, and the players want a shorter season and 100% of their salaries.
And I think they've come off of that a little bit to a proration of the games played, but then the owners come back. Okay, well, if we're going to get a proration of the games played, then we're going to play less games.
Yeah.
I mean, as of today, we're at like a 50-game schedule, and then like everyone makes the playoffs, and And I think everyone gets ice cream at the end of the season, or $5 at the concession stand. I don't know how it works, but it's not a baseball season. Baseball is going to be very difficult to have any semblance of a season out of all the sports that we're.
And that'll be part of our, I think, what guides our decision about what sport we bring back. Because we're assuming this is until quarantine's over. You only get this one sport. And maybe we'd say quarantine's over on the vaccine timeline, which is maybe a year for, a full season of whatever sport we're talking about. I will say, though, Rob Manfred does sound very optimistic at this date that a season will be played. Let's listen to Rob for 1 second.
We're going to play baseball in 2020, 100%, if it has to be under the March 26th agreement, if we get to that point in the calendar, so be it. But one way or the other, we're playing Major League Baseball.
So he seems confident, Paul. I mean, what format that takes, one thing that I think is intriguing about choosing baseball as the sport to come back is because it would be very different. Right. And then you wonder, does that force changes onto the game that pull a game that used to be number one of the rankings of the major four sports in most of America and is now most decidedly 3-4 with the NHL, probably four for a good portion of the country. Do those changes then help rejuvenate a sport that is in dire need of some change? There's some reasons why you might choose baseball. I think the one sport, Paul, that really speaks to me as being the most interrupted by the quarantine was the NBA, because you were really starting to enter that stretch of the NBA season where, the true contenders, and there were many of them this year, were starting to, emerge and show themselves, jockey for position. Teams that maybe had some health issues were starting to put those pieces together, like figure out how they're going to rest their people to be most healthy for the playoff run. You're starting to look at potential playoff matchups, and then boom, Adam Silver halts the season. And I do want to stop for 1 second and commend Adam Silver and the NBA, because when Rudy Gobert tests positive for coronavirus, Paul, the whole country at that point is still operating in the normal pre-COVID environment. And I really think that single event and then Adam Silver's decision to immediately suspend the season, it accelerated the shutdown of America for the virus, and probably saved lots of lives. I don't think if Rudy Gobert's positive test doesn't come out and the NBA doesn't very publicly stop their season so quickly, it may have been another week of delay before, people started making changes. I think that singular event was the most important thing that happened in the pre-corona timeline.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. I mean, and I applaud him as well for taking the action. I mean, think about it. He took the action in the middle of NBA games. There's games going on, and Mark Cuban's getting a text message saying season's cut. And he's like, he's standing up showing everyone the text message like, look at this. Like, I don't even know what's going on. So it shows that he made a decisive action. And I'm not saying didn't get the owner's input, or I'm sure he was talking to some people, but he knew something needed to be done, and he made the decision to get it done. And as commissioner, who had the right, made that decision, which, quite frankly, depending on how it went and how people viewed coronavirus at that time and viewed it 3 weeks after that, if people were like, wow, he really jumped the gun on that, he cost himself his job. Like, the owners would fire him.
Yeah, I think Adam Silver has by far had the most measured response of all the major commissioners. The most kind of he took action when it was needed. He's had thoughtful and innovative plans as to how to bring his sport back and when. And it looks like at this point that he's actually going to get his sport of the major four. I know golf is being played today, but he's going to get his sport back on the court or the field first. Now, part of that is because it was in season versus preseason, yes, but I feel like he's shown decisive action and patience and thoughtfulness throughout the board. And let me play one clip from Adam Silver, which I think demonstrates that.
again, I think now, because so little is known, you know, we're here, we're ready to go. I mean, I don't want to leave the suggestion in with anybody that we're not doing everything we possibly can to restart under the right circumstances. But of course, player safety and the health of everyone in the NBA family has to come first.
And I think that is a representative quote and tone and tenor to how Adam Silver has handled a very difficult situation. It's thoughtful, it's measured, but there's, you know, decisive action that is, you know, is on top of it. So kudos to Adam Silver. Paul, if the NBA returns, well, it looks like the NBA is returning, and it's going to return in Disneyland, right? Disney World. Very, very few people in the stadium, but there will be some people. I believe there'll be some family or like, yeah, that it won't be totally empty, but it won't be, there won't be fans, is my understanding. And in quick 8-game season into a version of playoffs that's a little bit different than what we've seen in the past. How do you like the proposed plan that Adam Silver's put together for a return to the NBA?
I think it's the best that you can do. You know, I mean, right now, you know, you can't have fans in the stands. You can't have teams traveling around all over the country trying to, you know, be in Boston one night, Miami the next night to play a game. They got everyone in one area to do it. I think it's going to be weird. I think basketball is going to be, it's almost going to feel like summer league or like basketball camp almost. I mean, because, you know, you're going to have the Celtics playing the Nets on one court, and then like 20 feet away, you got the Lakers playing the Warriors, or I don't think the Warriors are part of it, but you know what I'm saying. Like, there's going to be multiple games going on at the same time in the same area. I think it's going to be a little bit weird to watch. I'm almost curious if they're going to wear uniforms or if they're going to wear, like, practice gear.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
With respect to the environment itself, are you in favor of piping in a little fan noise? Like, if you can do it the right way, just to put a little bit of an undercover over the top of that? Because if you think basketball, you've really got squeak, 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 bounce, 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 right? Like, you've got, yeah, it's a, the sounds of basketball without anything around it are a little bit odd, right? It's, that's not what you're used to. You could pipe in some noise. That's one question. And the second question I'd ask on that is, like, are you a favor of players being mic'd up, all players, or only select players, or catching how much audio of what they're saying on the court with a little bit of a delay, obviously?
Yeah, see, so I think everyone can take a lesson from the Tiger Woods, Peyton Manning, Phil Mickelson. I forgot which one I left out of them, but the other guy.
I just forgot which.
Yeah. Oh, Tom Brady. Yeah. that tournament, like, that was a way to mic up someone. It's a little bit different in golf. I mean, in basketball, you're going to drive through the lane, you're going to get hit in the head, and you're going to say, "Oh, F." You know, and when you're listening to things like that, even when you're watching a regular game, they're on some sort of delay, and you get all these pauses, you know, like these, you know, and you can't hear anything that's going on. It's just because because someone's swearing the head off, typically Kevin Garnett in those situations. But so it could get awkward if you're miking up a basketball player and expecting to get content like you got with Phil Mickelson breaking down a green and how he was going to approach a shot and then execute it exactly how he was going to say it and see the ball land 2 feet from the cup and just like, wow, okay, these guys just aren't playing like me. They put a lot more thought into the game. So I don't know how they could pull that off, but if they could, if they can find a way, and whether that's miking a coach or anyone on the bench that knows they're mic'd and is going to be talking and giving insight into what's going on in the court, I think that would be positive. You know, Kemba Walker comes out of the game, mics him up to like talk about the next the last 5 minutes that he was in the game and what happened and what he saw. I think that could work really well. I don't know if during the action it would work well in basketball.
Well, and is it fair to the players to expect them to talk to the audience versus just having their their on-court vocals mic'd up. You know what I mean? Like catching whatever ambient audio happens in the game versus actually miking him up on the bench when he comes to the bench and saying, okay, tell us stuff, right? Tell the TV audience what was going on. I think, like, I know baseball, for example, there's been some times in preseason and was it the All-Star game? I can't remember where they mic'd up All-Star a person game. Or two and done talk. Yeah, like, that's worked really well. I think baseball's a sport.
But
that,
I think
that works very well because there's so much downtime and pause. And you could actually have a conversation with an announcer. Like basketball, I think would be great for picking up the sounds of the game versus like a dialogue with the fans. But, you know, and a lot of that also depends on what they do. Do they change the way announcers interact with the TV audience?
Well, I think that's the key. I mean, you can't put a mic on Kemba and just say talk for 5 minutes without someone interviewing him, talking mm-hmm. to him about it. You know, asking about specific plays, like this happened here, you know, can you explain that? You would need that type of guidance versus, you know, Phil just had a mic and a whatever they put on their back there to plug in the mic
pack
and was talking and was giving insight. And you did have Justin Thomas like doing somewhat of interviews and leading things, but you can do things like that on baseball. Like even on baseball, like if you maybe wanted to have the communication between a second baseman and a shortstop and just pipe into them when there's a runner on first and talking about how they're covering and things like that, that could be exciting. Could be boring to some people that aren't really into the game as much as maybe you and I are that know about it. But just you could maybe learn some insights specifically from baseball. But like you said, I don't think you're going to learn any insights. You know, LeBron James isn't going to be going down and saying, oh, wow, I see that they have so-and-so on me. I'm going to go left and then spin and go right. And
I think you might get some. No, and I think, but I think you might get some if they really mic'd up the whole environment, right? You might get some conversation between players, like, you know, walking back up the court, you know, you've got to be aware of this switch or you got to do this or, you know, like some of those conversations or really for entertainment value, the trash talk, right? Which I think there's a lot more of in the NBA that you don't hear than you do. And maybe this is a chance to hear a little bit of what that, you know, what that sounds like, although maybe that wouldn't be good for the reputation of the sport.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean, I think they have that somewhat now. I mean, there's so many times, like if you're watching a TNT game or something like that, someone's mic'd up and you can hear what they're saying, but it's always after the fact. And like, this is what, you know, was said, blah, blah, blah. And they go through that stretch. I don't know how you make that live. And make it, like, there could be the best thing coming out, and all of a sudden one of those guys drops an F-bomb, and you lose everything. And that's bad television.
Or God forbid something's taken out of context in a competitive environment that just, like, goes totally awry, and then all of a sudden you have a controversy you just didn't need to have happen. You know,
that's another
and,
point.
And putting it in players' hands when they're not trained to do it and haven't done it before, don't know what that's like, I think is difficult. You mentioned golf and Justin Thomas, and I think the exhibition was a great experiment for what this, you know, this could look like without fans. But then Justin Thomas, who was so great in that environment, referenced that he wouldn't want to be mic'd up on tour talking to his caddy because those are private conversations and that he wouldn't want anyone to be privy to hearing any of that on a regular basis, which I thought was interesting because here's one of your more progressive, you know, kind of interesting people who clearly has an aptitude for it. And he was like, nope, that's my time. That's private. That's me working with my caddy. I don't want the world to hear that. Or maybe I don't want my competition to hear that thought process. Or, you know, so I wonder, you know, like golf is a really interesting one because it worked so well in that exhibition environment. I wonder how much of that translates to what we see. And I didn't see any of the coverage from today to see if anything was different. But I wonder what golf looks like. And would that be a sport that you would want to bring back as your only sport?
Not as my only sport, but I think we have follow-ups that we're going, and there's definitely a golf piece to that. Again, golf's outdoors. It's pretty socially distanced with no fans. I think that sport can go along fine. Listen, I mean, the roars of Augusta or a U.S. Open, when a big, those will be missed. There's no question about it. But you don't watch a golf tournament for the hope of a roar. You watch it to watch players play good golf and the competition between them. I think that sport will do fine coming back. And honestly, looking forward to it. You know, like, I mean, it is, it's on my television right now behind me. Like, I did watch it today. And it wasn't too different. I would say, you know, it was like any other tournament. Now, when it comes to a major, it's going to be a little bit, you know, I'll see how I feel then. But for a regular tournament, it felt pretty normal.
There's no sport that is probably across the country more ingrained in American culture right now than football, Paul, both yep. NFL and college. I think we could take them, you know, as separate entities in this conversation. But clearly Roger Goodell is ready to play.
But our job is to be ready to play, and we will be ready to play. And that's what we expect to do.
He's ready to play, Paul.
Something about Roger Goodell, like, people hate him. I hate him at times, but there's one thing. It's something. Everyone's backing off, right? Everyone's like, we're delaying everything. We're not going to do. He's like, nope, we're going to have the draft when we have the draft. Nope, we're going to do it when, you know, like, he doesn't care, you know. And you know what? Having the draft when he had the draft in the right in the middle of the heart of the lockdown was the right decision. So what? I didn't see him. People hugging the commissioner, but it gave us a sense that, you know, sports has not ended. You know, there is going to be something beyond this, and I like that he did it. Leading up to it, he was getting killed for doing a remote draft, and it worked, and television found a way to make it work.
And I didn't find it any less compelling or any different than any other draft. In some ways, I actually probably watched, well, I did watch more of it because there was nothing else on, right? But I think it afforded, you know, opportunities to explore different storylines and just do things a little bit different than when you have a live environment you're working with and you have all that the production people have to work with. They could focus on other things. And I don't know, maybe this is a... Once again, it gives you an idea of a better way to do things, you know, moving forward, possibly. I don't know.
And you saw humor. I mean, like, I mean, how hysterical is it to see an Alaskan Husky making the pick for the Patriots? You know, like, everyone else is like, they're all making this big. And Bill Belichick still being Bill Belichick, just is like, all right, you're going to take a picture? There's my dog.
There's my dog. The only thing that would have been better is if he had a glass of orange juice in front of the dog, Paul.
Yeah.
No, but I thought I do think the draft was excellent, and the, you know, the timing of it was needed, and I do think for America, I think generally the sport that if it was altered or delayed in any way that would have the biggest impact on the psyche of the country would be football, and I think it would be the NFL first, and then to a smaller sub-segment of more rabid fans, college football and NCAA football. Although, if you're an NCAA fan, you could just watch Big Cat's from Barstool, his NCAA 14, you know, live streams of games that are now drawing 80,000 people to watch him as an underdog Tennessee take on Virginia Tech for the national championship, which is pretty wild. But, you know, I think I think that shows there's a fevered college football, you know, environment, but they're finding ways. I think if the NFL fell off the map a little bit, that it would be really hard for the country.
And which is, I mean, leads me to, that's who I think I would pick as the one sport to come back. I think they can do a lot of different things with it. If it came back, I mean, I think you could, however you break it out, I mean, I think you could have four. Well, you already do have four nights. You have Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, but then
three
a lot
nights
of times you have
and
Saturday
then
as well.
But
you can start doing that, and then you can make the people that play on Saturday play on Thursday, right? To
It gets a little complicated in the scheduling. It's, you know, but it would be interesting if they did kind of branch out into some different programming windows, and especially if in our fictitious world where they're the only sport back, right, allowed back, then I think you would see, you know, the programming increase and change more so than it will in the real environment that we'll be working with, where multiple sports will be back at the same time.
And I think it's not over. One thing you wouldn't want is, I mean, you couldn't do games every day of the week, but there's something about football that it's 17 weeks a year. It's the day that, you know, the days that it's going to be on, you know, the teams that are going to be playing those days, you know, what games being played in your market. It's something to look forward to, but it's not something to, like, every single night. I got it. Like, that's one of the problems that basketball is going to have when they come back. Like, it's like they got these 8 games and then they got the playoffs. And they, you know, these playoff games are going to be jam packed with game after game after game. And you get into an oversaturation.
It's going to be like the NCAA tournament, but instead of, you know, the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's going to be for like 3 weeks straight.
Right.
Which the NBA playoffs is already, you know, a lot of basketball in a, I mean, even though I know there's lots of breaks, especially in the early rounds, though, you've got 2 games, 3 games a night every day for like, you know, a few weeks before you start to get, you know, into the rounds where there's actual days where you might not have a game that's broadcast in between, you know, some series that have ended or things like that, right? But one thing that I think will be nice is I think they will compress the playoff schedule a little bit compared to years past, right? We won't have, you know, that NBA finals over 2.5-3 weeks versus, you know, it'll be tighter.
Yeah, they'll definitely do that. I mean, but it's just like the early rounds, and it's like, again, you're playing in one location. I know there's multiple courts, but you're going to have to get a lot of games in one place. So it's just how they manage that. I don't know how they're going to manage that, but I'm sure they have a plan. It'll be interesting to see. That's the one thing I fear about the NBA, though, is just like, okay, that's too much. And if there's games going into overtime and the other team's waiting, same thing with like the NCAA tournament, right? How many times, you know, does that last game of the night because of a, you know, in that four, when there's 4 games in one city, because 2 of those games went into overtime, you know, that game doesn't get kicked off until 10:30, 11 o'clock Eastern time because, you know, that's the window they've been forced. You have to give these teams time to warm up, get up. It's just going to be interesting on how that is handled. Football, I don't think you have to have, I mean, if there's no one in the stadiums, you don't have to have necessarily, you know, a central location for games. Like, you can still have your home games and your away games. There's not as much traveling. It's once a week versus multiple times a week. I think they can make that work. And I think it will be, that's what I pick for what I want to come back, or college football. I lump them together. I want both.
College football brings in a whole nother layer because if you're not sending kids back to school in the normal way, can you really justify green lighting a football season, any, you know, athletics on top of that? Plus, some schools are making certain decisions about students while other schools are making other decisions. There's just a lot going on there that, you know, really athletics should come to take a little bit of a step back to the education decisions that are going on with all those college students first.
Absolutely.
And so I think you do have to look at that a little bit differently. NFL is a little bit easier just to wrap your head around how that would work.
UCF came back, the football players, for voluntary workouts, and 3 of them tested positive for corona like the first week back. So, like, red flag right there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably not the best decision for these schools to make. But hopefully,
to see the schools making, I mean, this goes back to a larger debate about college athletics, to see the schools making decisions specifically for the athletes that are different than the decisions made for the school at large. Like, it just doesn't work for me that you're prioritizing the athletics in a way that is compromising, you know, how the the total rollback of the universities, you know, looking. So I don't know. That one's complicated. But I agree with you that for a large group of you know, areas of the country, that's the most important. That would be the most normal thing. Let's just say it was just the SEC that came back. The South would be thrilled.
Absolutely.
Like, it's only SEC and, you know, the Big Ten, like, say, the top four or five conferences all decide to come back and play. Okay, that's fine. That's where the majority of the fans are. That's where the teams that are known nationally are. And, you know, who knows how it all comes together.
Yeah, it's just interesting because, I mean, being in SEC country, which I am, it's just interesting because the fan base, the game day, the tailgate, the RVs that are associated with college football is a big part of college football. And if that goes away, how much interest? I know the fans will still watch, but does it have that college game? Like, you see it every Saturday with college game day. If that's not, there is a passion about that that's different than the NFL. Like,
I know.
I know there are NFL passionate fans out there. I know, like, that tailgate and all that stuff. But I, myself, get excited for every single NFL game.
Yeah.
I'm without a college team, you know? Like, I mean, we grew up in New England. I guess you could go BC.
I'm in ACC country. BC Eagles, Paul, all the way.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I am.
No.
I always say I'm a college football fan. I like college football. It's great to watch. It doesn't really matter which team it is. It's generally the top programs produce great games. Like that Saturday night matchup is usually a great matchup that I love watching. But overall, most college football fans, it's really about, you know, wearing the colors, going to the game,
absolutely,
tailgating, all that stuff. And if that's taken away, I don't know how that's going to affect it.
Yeah. Well, but one last question with the NFL, Paul. That's the sport to me that would be most well served to pipe in some fan noise, because
absolutely,
it's a pretty easy undercurrent, and you can use some AI software to match good plays to increases in fan noise. I believe that there are solutions to actually mimic the rise and fall of action, and that they could do it pretty well. I mean, look, Indianapolis has been piping fan noise in for years, Paul.
Yeah. Yeah. And the Patriots have been deflating balls for years, but
yeah, I had to go there, Paul. Well, now Tampa's deflating the footballs, Paul. We'll see how that happens in a warm weather environment.
There'll be something with the humidity here and all that.
They'll be too inflated because of the ideal gas law, Paul. Right. I guess that's for another question. Look, I think we both would choose the NFL, it sounds like, as the one sport we would bring back. I would caveat that by saying the sport I'm most excited about currently coming back right now is the NBA. Just because it's right in front of us, and being Celtics fans, like, we feel like we've got a pretty special team that we're coming back to that we were really invested in. So I think that there's some momentum there for me that makes me very excited about that. But if I kind of divorced that part of it, the NFL would be the one sport that I would rather, you know, bring back for 1 year and not have anything else.
I agree.
Yep. All right. So we're not going to disagree on our one question today. Paul, a secondary question that I did want to pose, because some sports, you know, are not seasons. They're not made by, you know, a full season. Some are just events. There are sporting events that happen throughout the year that you get excited about that you would miss if they didn't exist. And our answer may be the same for this, too. But what's the one sporting event that you would bring back if you could?
Well, people will think that we never disagree, and some of our best conversations are disagreements. But I know your answer, and this is my answer, and I'm going to give something else at the end so that I could be a little bit different. During the whole quarantine, the worst weekend for me was Masters weekend, because it's just, and it is special because of you. I mean, we've gone to several together, but it doesn't matter. Every Masters weekend, we are firing off texts left and right about everything that's going on. We're talking about four holes ahead and what can be done. And like, it's just a very fun time for me that was taken as part of this. I mean, this is taken from everyone, but it was a weekend that really, for me, is when I was like, man, I really miss sports. I didn't necessarily miss, like, basketball was gone. I loved the Celtics and all that, but once it was gone, it was like, okay, it's gone. I'll wait for it to come back.
Yep.
When the Masters goes, I mean, they're going to bring us one in November, hopefully, you know, that we can get that one in. But at that time, we were like, well, we don't necessarily know. Is there going to be no Masters this year? That sucks. And then I think I talked to you, and one of the bright sides, what you told me, within a 5-month span, we'll have two Masters.
Fantastic. And,
yeah, and that's pretty exciting to look forward to.
And to see Augusta then, at a different time of year could be really interesting. I mean, I wonder how the course will change. We've seen it. Mm. You see it so manicured and so, like, put together at a specific time of year with the azaleas in bloom. Like, it's so orchestrated for that one weekend. To see right. it in a different time of year, what's changed? Like, how is it different? Is there any seasonality to it? Or does it look the exact same? I mean, we know they pipe in birds, Paul. They've got robotic birds all over the course chirping. Do they paint flowers on the azaleas that are no longer in bloom? I wouldn't put it past them.
I can guarantee you they'll be bringing in azaleas that can live 4 days and you know, regardless of the climate at that time. There's no way that course is not going to look the exact same. Now, the weather might be different, but that course will look exactly the same as how it does.
And I agree, and I think it's going to be much more of an effort than everyone realizes to get it to do it. Because if you look at, I've seen aerial shots of the Masters in November that someone posted up, like, you know, shots. It's browned out. Like, they don't play the course all year round, right? And so they really gear it towards that one week. And generally, it's kind of going dormant in November, and, you know, it's kind of healing itself and all the stuff that you know, golf course, you know, would do naturally to get it ready for the next year. So, you know, I wonder, it'll be very interesting to see, you know, how the Masters in November feels. But I agree, the Masters was the one event that I would bring back. I'll give you my second. It sounds like you have another thought. The NCAA tournament, I was robbed. Right, like that one, it was just, we were right on the precipice of it. I, being a UConn fan, they were coming together. They were going to make a run in the ACC tournament, which they needed to do to make the NCAAs. I felt like there was a chance they might do it. Those conference tournament weeks are so much fun because it's live or die for certain teams that aren't going to get a bid if they don't win in. And you know, that was all kind of swept out from under us. I would love to have that, you know, have that back in some way.
Yeah. And I mean, on, you know, I'm a Providence fan, as you being a UConn fan, you know, I think Providence had won 10 in a row. They didn't have a great season, but we're on that same elevation, going right into the tournament. I think they were at halftime when they called off the tournament
against Creighton, I think. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were poised to make a run in the NCAA tournament as well, or at least get there to the dance when, you know, not even a month and a half earlier, you were like, well, this is kind of a lost season. And those are the teams we know just from watching the Big East, and I can still consider UConn the Big East.
They will be back again in, I think, 20 days, Paul. We're on the official countdown.
We know that, you know, when a team gets hot, they can make certain runs. And so it was disappointing to see that, but my second that I'm going to give is there is always a Saturday in May that I love, and that is the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, losing that was another bad weekend. And I think that more along the lines of my family. My family loves the Kentucky Derby, always has. My mom, it's her dream to go to the Kentucky Derby. I did go and didn't take her. I pay for that all the time. But it is a wonderful event, and it's a spectacle, and that's what I like about it. It is an event, spectacle, a lot of fun. There's so much more to it than the one race that you see, but it's just a fun Saturday in May, and, you know, I did miss that. That was the second one for me, but of course I miss the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many sports that we've missed, and moments and things that have been, you know, just have been taken away that, you know, you don't get back. And I mean, in the grand scheme of things, obviously it's not the biggest deal, but to, when you, you know, live and kind of breathe and it's your biggest passion, right? And it just stops. You mourn for those things and those moments. And especially in this kind of coronavirus world where everything's so isolating, the one thing sports does is it bridges people together. It creates community across distances, across, you know, you don't all have to be in the same room rooting for the same team at the same time to have a connection with someone about sports. And I think sorely needed, like the sports reopening when physically we can't all reopen to our normal lives. At least having that and that unifying point will be really important for people. And hopefully we have some great moments with the NBA playoffs and the NHL playoffs, and, you know, baseball gets their heads out of their asses and figures something out. And, the NFL continues to move forward, and we get to see what a Tom Brady-less Patriots team looks like, and, you know, all sorts of other fun stuff. And, you know, I'm happy that sports is right on the horizon for us, Paul. And, that's our first one question episode.
We did.
If you have any questions, I'm going to put this out to the audience of none, Paul, that we have zero listeners as of the time we record this, but to anyone out there listening, if you have one question for Paul and I, just hit us up on Twitter at @TDALOISIO, TDALOISIO, @PTESTA9. And shoot some questions at us, and we'll see if they make a future one question episode. And until next time, Paul, that's been one.
Well,
question.
Hold on, Tim.
Oh yeah. You got a question. Yeah.
No, I just wanted to congratulate us, for doing a 30-minute podcast in 42 minutes. So,
oh, is it 42? All right. Well, I mean, that's not bad. We said,
no, that's great for us.
20, and then we said 25 and then we said 30. I did amend it to say it could be 3 hours, Paul.
That's true. That's true.
But for now, Hootie's going to play us out. Will you sing, Paul?
Every time I look at you, I go blind.